Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to Flow Guitar Enthusiasts with Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiasts, we are talking guitar tech with a round table of experts. From Nashville, we welcome Tim Miller, who is currently working on Kenny Rogers' tour. In studio, we have Steve David, who has worked with many hard rock and metal bands. And lastly, we welcome back Monique Carabello, who has worked with Alice in Chains and Slash, to name a few. Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio at www.sweetwater.com. And now here are your hosts, Jeff Birthday Boy Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Yes, it is my birthday.
Woo-hoo! Happy birthday!
So I just want to let you know that I am older than all of your guitars.
Than all of my guitars?
All of your guitars, I think. I have one guitar that's older than me. It's a 1920 Washburn.
And it's like, what, only 2 years older?
It's
not 1920s. You said it was 1904 or 5.
No, I think, well, it could be earlier than 1920s, but I think that it's around the 20s. But it was made by Lyon and Healy, so the harp company. It's kind of an interesting guitar, interesting pass.
Interesting.
Very interesting. Anyway, so what have you been up to?
Well, so I think I'm going to pose this question to our guests later, but I've got to see, well, I would say was, I got to have what I would say is a religious experience besides not going to an actual church, because that's where you have religious experiences and in trees when you see Mary looking back at you. Sorry, that's bad joke. Anyways, I got to see Stevie Ray Vaughan's number one Stratocaster at the Grammy Museum.
That's
and there
cool.
were some very interesting things about it that I you know, everybody hears that he's got large frets on his guitar. Now, you're not allowed to take pictures, so I don't have a picture to prove this, but I might. And the fret is huge on his guitar. I mean, we're not talking jumbo frets. Jumbo frets aren't even close, folks. The thing is like over half the size of a dot on his guitar. And they stood like really tall. There was also massive amount of wood missing right above the fretboard. Or right above the pickguard, like a half inch. It was like concaved in from him just like tearing away at it. Mm-hmm. Which I thought was pretty interesting. The other thing I thought was interesting that I've never known that, I don't even know how they would duplicate this. Like where there's missing finish and there's like wood grain, the wood grain is gone. So it's like, I don't know, it's gone. I don't know how to describe it, but it's just gone.
Did he Bondo it or something?
No, I think he just like sweat on it and it just like disintegrated. The guy like sweats like crazy when he plays. I mean, he doesn't now anymore. But I mean, anyways, if anybody is in Los Angeles, tell July, you guys have got to go see this down at the Grammy Museum. Because not only is his number one guitar there, which they have it displayed in a weird way. I didn't think it paid that guitar enough respect because that guitar is his guitar. Like there's no Hendrix guitar I could care to see because, frankly, I don't think there's really a Hendrix guitar that stands out for me. Even the Woodstock guitar. It was just a white Strat. I could go buy one of those. This guitar,
no,
you can't.
Because he had one of the great necks on there.
Oh, please.
Those four-bolt maple necks from that with the big headstock are rare.
It's a white Strat that has no personality. The freaking 59 Strat from Stevie Ray Vaughan has personality. Anyways, so they also had a Dumble amp there, which was cool. His Dumble amp.
We'll have to. Okay. Are you reserving your question for later?
Yeah, I'm going to reserve my question later.
Okay, I'm not going to spoil it because I've always been spoiling all of his questions.
Yes, you did. The other thing I thought was interesting, actually, everything about his setup that they have there, which is really neat, is basically was what he had when he was in Chicago before he died, or in Wisconsin. Sorry. Mm-hmm. And so he had his Dumble amp. He had quite a few Fender amps, all with EV speakers. None of them were Al Nicos, which I thought was very interesting. And he did not have a TS-808 Tube Screamer. He had a TS-9.
Mm-hmm.
It was original, though. So.
Yeah.
Anyways, it's pretty interesting. You all should go check it out.
Oh, I'm there.
Well, also, too, with the speakers that he was using, the EVs, they were easier, more accessible at the time. After they blew the speakers out on a lot of those amps, they would just get those. You know, those were one of the number one replacement. Though a lot of guys like those. I forgot who else used those. They have a little, to me, they're darker sounding than like a Celestion or the Jensen. But
I'm not going to complain about his tone. I think he had it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it does make a difference. I mean, I heard that the Allman Brothers, when they would blow their Celestions, they put JBLs in their cabinets. And Clapton did that, too, when he was in America because he couldn't get them. And it changes the sound. It affected the way they sounded. So it's just little trivia there. Anyway.
So some of the other guitars they had quickly for everyone is they had a 52 Esquire. I didn't know he owned one of those. They had a few of the guitars that he was pictured with on the front of his album covers, which I've never seen him play. So, but those were there.
That's cool.
No other Strats. So I was a little disappointed in that. I wanted to see some of his other Strats that he played. But
well, it has nothing to do with Stevie Ray Vaughan, but I was really blown away. My friend Joe went to the Hendrix Museum, and Hendrix had a D45. I thought that was really cool.
That's what he wrote a lot of his songs in New York City with.
He had a D45. Yes, he was a Martin man. Anyway, okay, well, listen, let's get back to our show. We're going to go ahead and take a break right now, and then we're going to be back, and we are going to be talking guitars.
Hi, this is Aaron Raby, your resident guitars and amps geek at Sweetwater Sound. 1-800-222-4700 or catch us on the web at www.sweetwater.com. Sweetwater is proud to partner with The Flow in bringing you the latest and greatest in all guitar-related things, be it tone, be it artists and musicians, their secrets on their tone, amplification, and live performance. We at Sweetwater are just as passionate as the folks on The Flow in bringing you what we consider to be the best in pro audio equipment and guitar and PA gear. Give us a call and we'll discuss gear whenever you like. The number here is 800-222-4700. And again, you can catch us on the web at www.sweetwater.com. I'm Aaron Raby, and thanks again for listening.
Mason was Jeff and Scott, Flow Guitar Enthusiasts, and enjoyed being on the show, and hopefully we'll get together again, and I'm going to go to bed. It's late. Thanks, guys.
Okay, we are back. It was Brent Mason, and I put him on because we're talking to another guy over from Nashville. We have three guests here that are just really – it's really an honor to have them on the show. First, I want to introduce Timothy Miller. He's a tech that's right now currently working with Kenny Rogers' band, but he's also worked with Billy Cox, which is a big deal for me. And he also worked on the groups. He did tech for Kid Rock. And he's also a luthier, too. So we're going to talk about that. Also, I have Steve Davids here. He's worked as a guitar tech for Samick and Silvertone, Switch Guitars. He's done tech for groups like Lizzie Borden, Armored Saint, Fatal Attraction with Johnny Crypt of LA Guns. And so we're going to be talking with him. And then thirdly, you've seen her on the show a couple of times, the wonderful Monique Caravello, who's recently purple-eyed John Five's Marshall head. And we're going to talk about that. And she worked on my Les Paul and made it beautiful. So we're going to talk about, so everybody,
she fixed it is what she did.
Well, actually,
I know you're going to claim that you liked it the way it was, but it was
no, I had her change it because it was, I wanted it to sound like an original Les Paul.
Thin.
But actually, they some of the guys liked that out of phase sound. Yes. It might have been intentional. So anyway, Tim, welcome from Nashville. Steve, welcome. He's here in studio.
Pleasure.
Monique, it's a pleasure to have all three of you guys here.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Now, let me ask you, first of all, we're going to put Scott on the spot.
Yes.
Since it's my birthday, I can do what I want. It's my party, and I can cry if I want to. Okay, anyway.
Happy birthday,
everyone. Thank you. Anyway, Scott posted a video of a problem that a lot of people have stringing their Strats, where the string gets stuck in the bar, you know, the block, where the tremolo block.
I believe what you want to say is your balls get stuck.
Okay. Okay. That's fine. All right. Anyway.
Was it the
just because it's your
one?
Birthday doesn't mean I can't be a little
nervous. Yeah. I got that. Okay.
It's all in ordering.
Yes. It's rock and roll. What can I say? Anyway. So he suggested a method of popping the string out, how to get it out when it's jammed. And I'm not going to say it yet because I want to hear what you guys have to say. So, Tim, I'm going to throw it at you. Have you had that problem, and how do you solve that?
My balls have been stuck before, yeah. it happens on occasion.
I recommend
the ball
loose
end
pants,
of the string does, you know, when you're changing strings or you have a broken string, and the ball end of the string becomes embedded in the soft, usually zinc trem block on the Stratocaster. And usually what I do is when you're changing the strings, I usually slacken the strings and then cut them off. That way you're not trying to drag the coil that's been wrapped around the tuning machine post through the tremolo and through the block itself.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, you could take the strap and the string that you just, you know, cut off and poke the ball end down through. Hopefully it's not embedded hard enough to where, you know, that doesn't do the trick.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
Other than that, I'm open to suggestions. That's something that I'm sure all Stratocaster players and all techs that work on Stratocasters deal with.
Okay. Well, let's throw it over to Monique. What do you do to solve that problem when that you can't get that gets jammed in there?
He took my answer. It's usually the low E. I cut a piece of it off and jam it in there and poke it out.
Oh, okay. And Steve?
Yeah, same thing. I've used the back end of a flashlight on the side of a stage and kind of tapped a string and push it through.
Push it through?
Yeah, smacking the guitar is a bad idea.
Not the guitar, the string.
I'm kidding.
Smack.
Yeah, but he texts for metal guys, so they don't care.
Well, actually, what I used to do is I used to use needle nose pliers and then just, you know, get close to the and push it through, and I would usually free it.
Yeah, for some reason, I've tried that too, and sometimes they just won't. Come out.
Yeah, you can't get it.
You have to get some.
Now, Scott suggests, tell him your solution, Scott.
Uh-oh.
Go to youtube.com/selenium. No, I'm just kidding.
He's just full of them today.
Watch the video there.
Plug.
An
plug.
Allen wrench.
Proof of age?
Just an Allen wrench will work just perfectly fine.
So.
And you don't have to worry about it not getting it out of there.
Okay. So, well, that answers that. I have one other question that a friend of mine asked about a Floyd Rhodes, and I wanted to bring it up real quick, and then we'll start talking more about what you guys are doing. He has a Floyd Rhodes, and the high E string, it's a used Rhodes. I don't know how old, though he said it looked like it was virtually unused. But the high E string over on the bridge, when he clamps it, it keeps popping out. Now, I'll throw this out to everybody again, too. What I suggest that they do is cut the ball end off, but leave the wrap and put that in. It might give a little more grab to it. And I just wanted to see what you guys thought. Tim, we'll start with you.
You know, cutting just the ball end off and leaving the wrap, that could work. But I would stress not leaving too much of this itself to make sure that was proper, because there's many different styles of Floyd Rose blocks, you know, string blocks. You know, those are the little tiny things that usually fall out and get lost when mm-hmm. people try to change their strings and flip the guitar upside down.
Mm-hmm.
As well as, you know, making sure that there's nothing stuck down inside there. I've seen, you know, pieces of string get broke off down inside there and then hamper the ability for that to be able to be clamped down properly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those would be like a couple of the first suggestions that I would look at. I'm very curious to hear what anybody else would you know,
would you guys
diagnose
happen to,
and how would you rectify the situation.
Would you guys happen to suggest that we are now like three decades past the 1980s and maybe not use a Floyd Rose? Sorry. Sorry, I'm in one of those.
No, I'm actually an advocate of Floyd Rose, even though I'm currently working for some country guys who, you know, would cry foul if they see a Floyd Rose on one of their guitars. But, you know, if you want to use the bar and stay in tune, basically they're kind of the industry standard.
Yeah. Well, actually, I have one I think was made by Kaler that you actually don't have to cut the ball ends. It slides through and then clamps down, which is actually kind of a cool thing. But, there's a lot of variations of them, but they do work. I definitely have to admit when they're set right, they really do work. They do the job. So, but... Steve, any?
First thing comes to mind, depending on how old the unit is, if it does have any wear and tear, you might just be looking at getting some new hardware.
So replacing the little clamp section of that that locks it in.
Or whatever new.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, but he said it was relatively new. I haven't seen it, so I can't tell you firsthand if it was worn out or something. But no, that's interesting. Yeah, he's listening to the show tonight, so I'll see what I'll try to follow up and find out what happened. That's with that.
What's his name? I'm going to apologize that he owns. I have a Floyd Rose guitar.
I'm not going to give his name out.
I'm sorry. I insulted the Floyd Rose. Actually, I have a Floyd Rose Gibson.
You know,
because I bought it.
We have to figure out. Steve, we have to get
that,
Floyd.
Those two don't go together.
We have to get Floyd.
Sorry, it's a Nighthawk.
Monique, you're going to have to help me get Floyd Rose on the show just to embarrass him.
I like that. See, I bought. That was my second electric guitar I bought.
We do archive these shows, you know.
Yes. It was a Nighthawk with a Floyd Rose, folks, because of Steve Vai is why I bought it. Because I don't like the skinny necks, but I like Gibson neck, and that was my solution.
No, the Floyd Rose, it's got its benefits. I mean, they're definitely good. I know a lot of people don't like the Kalers. I've played a few. I don't have any Kalers, the original Kaler, but those were nice, too.
Well, Jerry Cantrell uses them a lot. I have a new appreciation for them now.
They do work. The only thing they could never do is, at that time, is they didn't have the patent for locking the nut. But now you can get the part. So if you lock the nut, it's totally functional. But they were smooth. And they stayed in tune.
What do you mean locking the nut?
Floyd Rose had the patent for the lock, the clamp at the nut and at the bridge. That was his patent.
Oh,
so nobody could make a clamp at the nut without
paying. I was confused. I thought you were saying Floyd Rose didn't have that. I was like, what do you mean? That's how the Floyd Rose
works? No, Floyd had that. But anyway, okay. Well, let's move on. Tim, tell me a little bit about, you know, the day in life of what you're doing over there. I know that with with Kenny Rogers, which is a country group, you have a lot of different guitars and acoustic, and, you know, can you tell us a little bit of the problems that you encounter on the road with those guitars? Talk a little bit about the amps, setups, and any issues that you see and how you solve it.
Like most techs, a majority of what we deal with on a daily basis on the road is, you know, general maintenance, string changes, and dealing with client conditions, as well as what instruments are subjected to when they're stored in a semi-trailer in a guitar vault, or being subjected to being flown in airplanes especially. And that's something that has really surprised me. I recently spent quite a bit of time, about a year, year and a half, with Robert Randolph, a pedal steel player.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really surprised, you know, we'd have to always check a pedal steel, of course, and they would wind up in the belly of the airplane. And sometimes it would take hours and hours for that steel to warm up to room temperature after it had flown, you know, a transcontinental flight or something like that. So that's majority of what I'm dealing with on the road. You know, for the most part, any major repairs and stuff, they usually get sent to a shop. You know, or if somebody's fortunate enough to have me, you know, in their back line. I've been a luthier for 24 years and built a lot of guitars from raw material My brother owns a logging company in northern Michigan where I actually go from sometimes cutting the tree down to building a guitar out of it.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, any major repairs that I have, you know, I can usually doctor a guitar up enough on the road to get through gigs and then lucky enough to bring back to my shop here in the outskirts of Nashville. The guitars with the Kenny Rogers band, we're dealing with a couple acoustics, three acoustics, of course a Taylor, and every band seems to have a Taylor in their back nine these days. Another guy's playing, he's endorsed by Michael Kelly. He has a really nice Michael Kelly acoustic, and he plays in Nashville to me, which is basically like taking a 12-string guitar and only having the drone strings.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tuned standard EDE, but it adds a little bit of a jangly sound, I would say. My bass player, Chuck Jacobs, in the Kenny Rogers band, he's playing a custom Paul Reed Smith bass. Pretty sure Paul made it for him himself. It's really nice. Transparent red flame top. And he's also playing a Marco bass,
mm-hmm.
which is Marco is a boutique builder out in California. He's been working with Chuck and designing some really nice basses.
Oh, that's cool.
On the other side of the stage, I got Brian Franklin, guitar player, and he's playing quite a few different boutique Telecasters. Brian is very much into tone, so much so that he uses different kinds of barrel saddles on his Telecasters,
mm-hmm.
brass on the low end, aluminum on the high end, and he's very minute adjustments to any pickups or anything. He has a very good ear for hearing that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
As far as amps go, these guys like mini bands on the road, unfortunately for my eyes. But they're going to just rack systems. And it seems to be more consistent. You know, as we all know, you know, I'm a huge fan of stomp boxes and tube amps. But when you're going from gig to gig and bouncing around the country and the world, you need that consistency, and the ease of being able to set the stuff up, tear it down quickly, and not have to worry about having to, you know, change out tubes or anything like that. So these guys are all running rack systems, which I'm kind of against personally, but, like I said, we're on the road, that's what you need to use.
Sometimes. Are you seeing the use of, like, I've heard some of the bigger groups like Rush, he's using computer emulators. He's actually using those live. Or are you seeing people using, like, the Kempler modeling amp? Do you see that around? Where they sample
Brian right now is using an 11 rack, which mm-hmm. I find really fascinating because it's more, the controls of each individual setting is very analog in the way that it works, but it obviously is a digital modeling rack unit.
Right.
Randy Dorman has been Kenny Rogers' guitar player for 30 plus years. He's used a pod unit, and you know, once again, although it's not my forte, you know, it works very well for what these guys are using it for.
Yeah. Hey, so I got a question for you. So you mentioned a couple things, and I just wanted to get confirmation from the three of you guys here. Flying with a guitar, do you tune it down or not? And how far? And
I always.
And then the other question is, what is your guys' trick when your guy on stage breaks a string and you got to change that string and you got to get him that guitar back in like 30 seconds and you don't want it to detune during the song?
Well, I always detune strings when I fly with them. I also detune them when they just slightly slacken. When they go in the vault and they're going to, you know, if I'm not going to see the guitar for a week or two, if we have a week off, I found that, you know, not only flying with the guitar, but just changes in elevation as the equipment is trucked around the country will come into play as far as tension on strings. Guitar's a piece of wood, and it's going to change with climate conditions, barometric pressures, elevation changes, all that stuff comes into play. So, you never want to have, obviously, too much tension on a neck, especially if it's going to be stored away and not seen for a period of time. What was the B part of your question?
When you guys are when one of your guys breaks a string and you got to get guitar back to him, and you don't want that string to detune, what are you doing to stretch it out to make it ready?
I get pretty good at, I've gotten pretty good at changing strings. I'm sure a lot of techs have. And I did mention just working with Robert Randolph. It was, Robert himself is so aggressive with the instrument. Sometimes I would go out and change strings in the middle. If he broke a string in the middle of a song, I would be running out there throwing a string on his pedal steel in the middle of the song. I used to do it with the bass player for Robert Randolph and the Family Band. He would get slapping and popping and break his 45,000 G string, and I'd grab a 45,000, cut it off about where I knew it needed to be cut off, and run out there and slide it on his bass and wind it up, and he would not even stop playing. So sometimes you got to do whatever it takes to make the show go as seamlessly as possible.
Monique, Steve, what do you guys do?
First of all, for traveling, about a half step down, maybe a whole step down, just loosen them.
Okay.
And as far as quick string changes, I like backup guitars. Just kind of switch them out.
Well, I mean, okay.
The least intrusive way, especially, the last experience I had was television, and you don't want to stand there and do that.
Well, okay, in that case, maybe you might. But, let's say you've got an artist like a Stevie Ray Vaughan who's clearly favors a particular instrument. They broke that string. So how do you get that guy ready?
Backup guitar.
No, man. No. Yeah, man. Ray Martinez.
Usually
a backup. Has everybody seen the video of Stevie Ray breaking the string and Ray Martinez's tech running out and swapping the guitar out from him in the middle of the song? And Stevie didn't even miss a lick.
I've seen that,
And what happened?
He literally was playing.
It was seamless. It was amazing. One of the best guitar changes on the planet. Stevie was playing, broke a string. Ray Martinez ran out there and unhooked the guitar and slapped another guitar on Stevie and in the middle of the song, and he just kept right on going like it never happened. It was amazing.
Usually they'll let you swap out, and you have a song length to basically rechange it. I've seen that happen.
Yeah.
I remember seeing Zeppelin. He broke a string, and he switched, and then the next song, they switched it back. So he had it back in time. But I have a question for all three of you. Fact or fiction? I was always told, if you have more winds on the string post, that makes the string more stable, less prone to go out of tune. True or not? I've done that on my acoustic guitars, and I found that it kind of stays a little more in the pocket, but just curious. I know that a lot of groups, with a Floyd or something like that, you just cut the string in, or locking tuning keys, you basically just cut them and put them on. But I'm just curious if you found that to be true or not, or is that fiction? And am I totally fantasizing?
Where do you want to start?
Go ahead.
Oh,
ladies first.
I don't like that. I don't like to overlap strings on the post. So usually on the bass side, about two to three winds. And then on the treble side, maybe five or six. But if it's going to start overlapping, no, I don't think that's good.
Okay.
I think it slips more.
Okay.
I have to agree with you as far as the slipping. And for me, it just looks more professional. I have more pride in when it's not overlapping.
Right. Yeah, well, I don't mean like doing like 30 watts or something. But
if it looks clean and it's holding together, I've never, done 30 wraps or something to actually see the difference.
I think maybe 10. Yeah, but that's basically the thin strings, the E or B.
Yeah.
But yeah. What do you say, Tim?
Well, I work out with so many different instruments that I do it different. If a guitar has a tilted headstock or if it's a Fenderish cutback headstock, I don't like too many wraps. I like to keep it, within a range of two or three, like Monique said. But you'll find that on Fenders with the cutback headstock, especially on the A and the D string, you actually do need a couple extra windings on there to keep the proper tension over the nut. You got to have proper downward tension on the nut, otherwise the string just vibrates and kind of sounds sitar-y.
Yeah.
Especially if it's an older Fender and the headstock is pulled up at all, I found that to be true. If it has a fillback headstock, I usually, you know, tie and wrap the way majority of us guitar techs, you know, install strings. Mm-hmm. And two to three wraps, never more than three, though, even on the treble side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just more string to have to stretch out and to settle in, and obviously the less string that you have there. I'm talking about Floyd Roses and why they stay in tune, because they lock down at the nut and lock at the bridge, and there's very little string to have to stretch in that period, you know, in that length.
Yeah.
Although, longer scale lengths, I shouldn't say scale lengths, but longer string lengths, even beyond the nut and the bridge, does take a little more tension to bring up the pitch. You'll find like a reverse six and line headstock, the lower E string will actually have a little more tension on it to come up the pitch to say if it was a regular six and line, a right-handed six and line.
Mm-hmm.
So there is kind of a give and take there, you know, when it comes to string lengths, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
There's a happy medium between what you want to be, you know, you don't want to have so much string that you have the stretcher bunks and you're constantly out of tune,
mm-hmm.
but you want to keep enough tension on the string as well so it's not flopping around and sounding like a sitar in a nut.
Mm-hmm. No, that.
Am I getting too in depth, you guys?
That's important to know that. I mean, I've never. Again, I was told that years ago, and I did that. But it's interesting to see from experience because you guys are dealing with way more guitars. I mean, I have a few, but not as many as you guys have probably strung.
Well, I've noticed some of the Strats too have the shorter posts on the headstock too. So some of them you can't get more than two windings on them all the way up. So
yeah.
It just depends on how they're built.
Another thing I wanted to ask you guys about, we were talking, Scott had mentioned about flying, but also, especially back east, again, the weather here is pretty consistent, but over there it changes a lot. And I was mentioning before the show with Steve and Monique, I was following on Facebook Arlo Guthrie and also the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. And they were playing a gig outdoors and it started raining. And so Arlo Guthrie said he pulled out his rain song guitars that are graphite. Are you seeing that type of a trend, or what do you do when you have like extreme moisture or extreme weather conditions? Can you do anything? Or, I mean, how do you handle, especially the acoustic guitars? I'm sure that must affect them a lot. Tim?
Well, you know, all graphite guitars are awesome. You know, I'm sure we've all seen the rain song ads where they're literally pulled guitars out. What was it? Hurricane Katrina. They had pulled some guitars like from underneath cars and stuff. And rain song, their display at the NAMM convention actually has like a shower head running on a guitar, running water on a guitar.
How did I miss that?
Pull the guitar out and strum it, and it's perfectly in tune.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as far as what I'm doing on the road, you know, obviously we all keep the, you know, whatever truss rod nut adjustment tool that you need to make adjustments on the fly. And, you know, try not to subject anything to too much extreme changes in climate conditions that too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously sometimes you got to play gigs outside when it's 40 degrees outside. You know, we just had a situation where we did a loadout and it was nice and cool in the venue. We pack everything up, go to loadout, they throw the door open to our semi-trailer, and it was extremely hot and humid out, and everything just got covered with moisture. So much so that the next day when I was pulling the instruments out of their cases, they were still covered in moisture like a beer would sweat even.
Wow.
So, you know, you gotta be careful with that, some of that kind of stuff, especially acoustic instruments, you know, that don't have finish on the inside of them and are finished on the outside of them. They tend to move around and change, usually a lot more than what people realize.
Right.
Now, you know, it's just general daily maintenance. You know, that's just part of what we deal with on the road. It's just the general daily maintenance, you know, going from one climate to another.
Let me ask you another question. Like, okay, this is like a procedure question because I think all guitarists need to be aware of this. And I'll start with Steve. Is you're in a place, a place like it back east, it's snowing or something like that. It's really cold. You're pulling out all the stuff, whether it's a stadium gig or an outdoor gig or whatever. What do you do with the guitars? Do you just, like they tell you to do, basically just open the case and leave it closed? Do you acclimate the guitars, or do you have to worry about that?
Always worrying about it, but it comes down to time when you're out there. Sometimes you have 60 seconds and the artist has got to be playing the guitar, so there's not much you can do about it. If you have time, you let it sit in a hotel room or wherever and let it okay. come back to room temperature.
So yeah. ideally, I mean, but like, let's say while they're setting up the system and you're pulling out the guitars, you're getting ready for the show, will you still leave them in the cases or do you just open them up and expose them? I know you're dealing with electric, so they can take a little more of a beating. But yeah. if they're using acoustic guitars and like, Tim, what you're saying about where the finish on one side, on the outside of the acoustic guitar, but the inside there is no finish. You know, what do you do? Which do you have enough? I mean, do you usually have enough time to acclimate the guitars that way? Or, I mean, I'll throw that out to everybody now. Tim?
Well, I try to, get the guitars out and let them get acclimated to the temperature that they're going to be played in as quickly as possible. You know, sometimes that's a give and take, though. If, you know, we load in at 9 a.m. and it's 60 degrees, and sun comes over, hits the, you know, we're playing outside, sun comes over, hits the stage, and it's 85 degrees by the afternoon, and then showtime, 8, 9 o'clock, it's back down to, you know, 70 degrees or so. You know, you got to kind of play with that and, you know, adjust the instruments, you know, in and out of cases or the vault or, you know, whatever may need to be. I tend to not like to have my guitars in any climate conditions that I would like my body to be in.
Right.
Yeah, I'm really not going to want to go sit in 100-degree sun, so I'm not going to put my guitar in the 100-degree sun.
Right. But you'll take them out and acclimate them immediately, or do you do the gradual thing? Because I thought if you take it out too fast, it'll check the finish.
It will check the finish and crack acoustic guitars even very easily. No, I try to do things very slowly. You know, it's not like I'm cracking a guitar case immediately. A lot of us on the road are using guitar vaults, which are built, you know, rugged to withstand the road, but they're not sealed up completely themselves, so that the air is actually going in and out of that no matter where the instrument's at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think of a guitar and a guitar vault sitting in the back of a semi-truck in the middle of the Arizona desert, though, you know, how hot do you think it's getting in there? Which falls back to one of the reasons why I always detune guitars a little bit, because you don't mm-hmm. want them under tension, under that extreme heat.
Mm-hmm.
When I lived in northern Michigan, I had a guitar shop, a storefront up there, and I don't want to start shaking my finger and shaming guitar companies that are made or guitars that are made overseas, but I would have mom bring me a guitar, and you know they would wonder why their brand new guitar that cost $150 needs $200 worth of work. And I would explain to them that, well, the guitar was probably went from a tree to a guitar without being dried properly, and then built in Asia and then put in a shipping container where it spent the first couple months of its life in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. In a shipping container where it was subjected to extreme heats, and all that fresh wood and fresh glue is, you know, bending and contorting under tension, and you know, and then it lands on the West Coast, gets shipped around the country to the music stores, and you know, and then mom and pop buy a guitar and take it home, and they already have a guitar that the fretboard is now dried up and the frets are falling out, and you know, and wood has, you know, glue joints have creaked and things like that. Those are things that still happen to all instruments over time.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, like I said, when you're out touring and, you know, flying around and traveling around with instruments like that, it's really, really hard on them, which is why a lot of guys have road guitars, you know, that they take home, beat up, and then, you know, they're nice guitars that they keep for the studio use.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I know you had just mentioned that the guys in you and Tim that you work for now are using a lot of rack mount stuff. I'm going to direct this to Steve, because I think a lot of the bands that you've are heavy metal and hard rock bands, I presume they're using like Marshall heads and tubes. How long did the tubes last? Do you find yourself changing those a lot, or do they pretty stable? Or, and what do you do to preserve the tubes? And Monique, I know you've worked with, well, you've worked on John Five's amp, Retolix thing, but you've also worked teching for people that are using amps. How do you keep them, you know, because tubes can last long if you take care of them.
In my experience, it's pretty much in the back of my mind. Mm-hmm. Sorry about that. Yeah. It's one of the last issues, really. It's there. It's good. It works. It's really not an issue.
Do you test them before the show? Because, you know, they could fail during a performance, or is really not an issue?
That's really not an issue, not in my experience. Other people might have something different, but with me, it's never
come
up.
Had it. Yeah. Yeah. Knock on wood.
No kidding.
You know. What about you, Monique? Have you had? Do you do anything to kind of check them, or?
No, that's more of a shop thing. Typically, when I've been teching for people live, I've mostly been dealing with their guitars. Not too much with the amp itself. I mean, I haven't had to do any kind of maintenance with the tubes or anything, or check tubes.
Okay.
In a situation like that. So.
Okay. Tim, have you, when you've worked with guys that are using tube amps, have you ever had that issue, or it really isn't an issue?
Yeah, man, I have pulled tube amps out of their cases and seen nothing but broken glass in the bottom of the chassis before. I mean, you know, things out there getting beat around in a semi-truck. Mm-hmm. And up until recently, you know, even having a tube tester on the road, even being operating a tube tester, it seemed like you needed a degree in some kind of weird technology that I can't pronounce. But about a year and a half ago, Orange Amplifiers, they developed a tube tester. It's a BT-1000. And it's an amazing tool. I highly recommend that anybody with a tube amp get one of these things.
Mm-hmm. You know, you could go to www.youtube.com/Selenium and you'll see a demo of that VT-1000.
Yeah, they let us borrow one, and Scott did a video of it. But yeah.
Aren't they amazing, Scott? I mean, they're just great tools, and they're extremely simple to use. You basically plug the tube in, press the button, and it tells you whether the tube, you know, what condition the tube is in.
Yeah, it gives you three pieces of information. It tells you it's bad, good, or used. And then it gives a rating. That's it. I guess that's four pieces.
I have to admit, it was fun using the original tube testers at the electronics store. It was like a big console, and it had the little dial, and it was kind of fun.
Well, and these are much more portable, too. They're only the size of a, I don't know, what would you say, like a mini iPad?
Yeah, they're very lightweight.
Yeah.
You know, I think the street price is between $400 and $500 for one of them, and you know, it's a very, very useful tool for anybody who's, especially touring guys are out there. You know, before that, it was basically, you know, tubes go bad. You know, when you're on the road, you're yanking them out, just shoving another tube and amp and crossing your fingers.
Yeah.
And, you know, unfortunately, there's not a lot of tube amp repair places across the country. You know, you usually got to be in a major city to get somebody who's going to be able to fix a tube amp problem.
Yeah. Now, babe, because we're getting close to the end of the show, are you going to ask him your tube question?
That wasn't a tube question.
No.
Was it?
The other tube question about the Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Oh, well.
The mystery tube.
Well, so the Dumble amp has, so Stevie Ray Vaughan's Dumble amp has tubes in it that I've never seen before. They're, you know, like, you know, 6V6s or whatever, probably like the most, the 6L6s? Biggest circumference.
No, 6L6s.
Did I say, what
6V6s are the little guys.
Sorry. So I don't
know. You don't have enough fenders. You need a little more fenders.
Whatever. Anyway, so the big power amp tubes, right, they're like a quarter size, right, the base of them.
Right.
They're not very big. These tubes were like, I would say,
silver dollar?
No, they were a little bit bigger. I would say maybe just under a racquetball size. They were huge. But they weren't like those old RCA tubes, you know, that look like a light bulb. Start out small and then go big. They were like straight through tubes. Now, this is a Dumble, so who knows what the hell it is.
I'm wondering if he was using it, because I know that they use something similar to that on like power amps. I think Macintosh power amps used a tube like that. Or I'm wondering if it was a KT-66. I don't know what the shape of a KT-66 is.
All I know is that my orange tube tester would not work with this.
That's interesting. What do you, have you ever seen anything bigger than a 6L6 in your experience, Tim?
Not in any modern amplifier. You know, and very old stuff, you know. I've seen a few amps that come out of Germany in like the late 20s and 30s that had a lot of different weird tube sizes and in them. But nothing, you know, nothing in a modern amp, no.
Okay.
Yeah, and the cool thing about this Dumble Boy, I hope he doesn't get mad at me
it
if he ever
in
the show, but I mean, this is all visible at the museum, so I don't feel like I'm giving away any Dumble secrets here, but there's a huge HeatSeek fan underneath it, too. So I imagine that's because he epoxies the whole damn thing, but yeah, there's like a huge fan, like, I don't know, I would say it was probably like 6 inches in diameter, mounted inside of it.
Maybe that's the secret of the Dumble tone that nobody else has been able to achieve.
It's a fan.
I definitely, the fan and the giant tubes. I'd definitely like to check it out, and someday I get out there and see exactly Stevie's real amp.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I think the setup was what he had right before he died. So
I think you should send Tim that picture that doesn't exist of the back.
I'm not sure what you're talking about.
That's true.
A picture.
Anyway, if there is one out there, you know.
Not allowed to take pictures at the Grammy Museum.
But I do have one horror story that I have to share with you guys. It wasn't my amp, but it was when I was touring. We were over in Baltimore, and I was working like a lounge group. But the band that was rooming in the same hotel with us was a heavy metal band. And this guy had Music Man heads. They were 100-watt heads.
Oh, yeah.
And if you remember, for those that don't know, Music Man was a hybrid amp. It had a preamp that was solid state, and then it had, I think, the power stage was tubes. So anyway, this guy was playing. He said, can you help me with this thing? I don't know what happened with my amp. It just doesn't work. So he was playing. I found out later he was playing with a Variac. And so I went in the back, and I turned it on. Nothing happened. And I go in the back, and there was a puddle of glass. He had melted the tubes.
Ooh.
With the Variac. And I go, well, you shouldn't use that Variac too much. I turned it really up, and it sounded great. And I'm like, yeah, but you melted your tube. He literally melted the glass off of the tube socket.
That's an expensive guitar tone.
Yes, yes. Well, actually, if I'm correct, Eddie turned it down, not up. He actually did a brownout. You know, he basically lowered the voltage, which made it distort.
I've heard different things of what Eddie did. Some was that. Other people have told me that he turned the Variac up, but had a dimmer switch in the back and turned it down, so it couldn't come out of the amp.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know which one's true.
Well, I can tell you what we do know about Nikola Tesla investigations with that myself.
Mm-hmm.
And Eddie actually did turn it down.
Okay.
A few months ago, I was able to have an in-depth conversation with Eric Johnson. Mm-hmm. And Eric swears that there's in the batteries in his wah pedal, that there's a sweet spot where when a 9-volt battery is about 2/3 to 3/4 power, his wah pedal sounds the best.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Granted, Eric probably has better ears than all of us, but he's kind of the man. And you know, in testing that, I found that you know if you grab a brand new 9-volt battery and stick it in a wah pedal and crank it on, it kind of does have like a little high end bite to where when the battery does start to die a little bit, it does seem to sound a little sweeter in tone. So I can see where Eddie was able to get that warmer
It's funny that he mentioned that because I've read Joe Wall saying that he used to take his 9-volt pedals and put 10 volts in them and they sounded killer. He said they wouldn't last long, but he said, I got the best fuzz tone. The distortion pedal sounded better at 10 volts.
So I'm not sure how well Joe's hearing is doing these days.
So I have a couple quick questions for you guys, a little quick disco between everybody. So speaking of Stevie's guitar, that was like the guitar I've always wanted to see. What's the one guitar you guys would like to see, starting with Monique?
Well, I had time to think about it because you asked me before the show. And I have to say, I want to see the Yardbirds Telecaster.
Even more than Jimmy Page's Les Paul?
Yeah, there's just something unique and funky about that old Yardbirds Tele with that funky design on the front.
So if you had it in front of you, what would be the first thing you do to it? Like, would you, like, want to open it up? Would you, like...
Smell it.
I was going to ask you if you were going to smell it. The smell of an old guitar, is just it's something about it.
That's true.
I don't know. There's something about that.
Steve?
I'm a huge Randy Rhoads fan, so I'd love to be in the same room as that Randy Rhoads Flying V.
The polka dot?
Yes.
Okay.
That's a good one.
Tim?
Oh, that's such a hard one. Because I love each and every guitar in its own little way, but I would have to be a toss-up between Eric Clapton's Fool SG, which I'm actually doing a replica of right now.
Oh, that's cool.
And Billy Gibbons' Furry Explorer.
Okay.
But with the spin strap, man, because we all just wanted to get our Explorer, give it the spin, the watch, just to go to town.
That's pretty cool.
That's funny.
All right, now my next question would be, so my little video with the Allen wrench, you know, granted, now I've still watch the video, guys, but that's no reason to watch it now. But what's your guys' tip and trick? Like, what's a guitar hack that you guys had to do while on tour that, like, something weird happened and you had to, like, toss a McDonald's wrapper in there to stop a vibration or some crap like that? What, I don't know. I'm just tossing it out. Any weird thing that you've had to do to fix a guitar while on tour?
The one that comes to mind for me is cutting a sliver of pick to build a little ridge on a bridge.
Interesting. Okay.
Or on a saddle. I'm sorry. Yeah.
On the back of the guitar, the plate that covers the 9-volt battery. Mm-hmm. Lost it in the middle of a set. Battery's dangling on the stage. I had to run up there with a piece of duct tape. Tape it back together.
Duct tape. The most important thing in our industry, duct tape. We could never live without
any industry. Plumbing, mechanics.
That's true.
Give me toothpicks and a duct tape, I'll give you a skateboard.
Tim?
Oh, man, I don't know. I've done about everything you have to do on a guitar in an emergency situation. I don't know. I've never welded with a nickel like MacGyver, but I've done some pretty crazy things. I was out of strings with a small time rock band, and I actually took two strings and tied them together so the knot in them was beyond the nut between the nut and the tuning machine post.
Able to use
two pieces of string tied together to get the band through the gig.
You must do a hell of a knot when you're fishing.
No kidding.
I grew up in Michigan. We were all sailors and guys out on the water. We were definitely going to learn to tie some knots, I guess.
So the guitar had a nut and a knot.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, it had a knot beyond the nut.
Okay, you
a knot beyond the nut.
That's pretty amazing. Well.
Well, we can't go yet.
Ha.
All right. But before you do that, I just want to make sure everybody check out Timothy Miller Guitar Tech Luthier on Facebook, Monique Caravello on Facebook, Steve Davids on Facebook, and check them out. And we'll get more information on all of them, too, and we'll be posting it on the Flow Guitar site. These guys are amazing. They all work on guitars, and as you heard, Tim's a luthier. So if you want one built and he has time, you could have one built. But these guys know their stuff, and I just before Scott does his thing, I just want to thank all you guys.
It's your birthday, man.
But anyway, I just want to thank everybody for being on the show. All right, Scott.
Well, I'm not singing, so.
Oh, really?
I can't sing. I can't sing. I'm terrible at singing.
Well, this will be nice having a guitar, because anytime people sing happy birthday, it's in 12 different keys. Every time.
I'm a smoker, so.
you just call it jazz when you're all out at different keys.
That's right.
All right, you ready?
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday,
thank you, guys. That's probably the most unique.
Hey, thanks for having me on, man. Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. Guys, everybody, thank you so much for being on the show. And everybody, have a great week. Happy Labor Day.
Thanks, Sweetwater, for sponsoring the show.
Yes, and we will see you guys next week. Tim, hang on the line. We'll talk to you after the show's off the air. And then again, Monique and Steve, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Good night, everybody.
Peace.